His name was Ralph Devereux. He had recently moved to the city following a divorce. I suggested we have a drink at the Golden Glow, and as we walked down Adams Street, I bought a Sun Times. The Golden Glow is in the South Loop. Sal, the bartender, is a magnificent black woman, 6 feet tall. This afternoon, she wore a silver pantsuit. She brought me a shot of Black Label. Ralph ordered a gin and tonic and placed a $5 bill on the table. I gave him back his money. "Sal runs a tab for me," I explained. I thumbed through the paper. They'd given the story on page 7. Radical banking heir shot. Peter Thayer's roommates and their radical activities were given the most play. The Ajax Insurance Company was not mentioned at all. I showed the column to Devereux. He snatched the paper from me.
"Peter Thayer, dead? What is this?"
"I don't know. I'd like to find out."
"You knew when you bought the paper?"
"I found the body."
"Why the hell didn't you tell me over at Ajax?"
"Well, anyone could have killed him. You, Yardley Masters, his girlfriend. I wanted to get your reaction to the news. I'm a private detective."
"You're no more a detective than I'm a ballet dancer."
"I'd like to see you in tights and a tutu. Just to clear up the point, Mr. Devereux, did you kill Peter Thayer?"
"No, I did not kill him."
Devereux relaxed somewhat.
"I'd like to have seen Yardley's face when you asked him if he'd killed Peter."
"I didn't ask him. I couldn't figure out why he wanted to talk to me, though. Did Peter Thayer work with any confidential papers at Ajax?"
Devereux was surprised. "You're not trying to link his death with Ajax, are you? I thought he was shot by one of those drug addicts who are always killing people in Hyde Park."
"I don't think Peter Thayer is just the neighborhood's July-August statistic. This boy was sitting at his kitchen table, probably ready to come down here Monday morning, and someone put a hole smack in the middle of his head. Now, a professional killer might have done that, but he'd have to bring along someone whom the boy knew to get his confidence. It could have been you, Masters, his father, or his girlfriend. I'm just trying to find out why it couldn't be you." He shook his head.
"I can't do anything to prove it."
"What about Masters?"
"Yardley, come on. The guy's one of the most respected people at Ajax."
He finally agreed to tell me about Masters' work and what Peter did for him. Masters was responsible for the financial side of the claim operation, and Peter checked the claims. Dull, day-to-day activities that businesses need in order to keep on going. And yet, Masters had agreed to see me, an unknown person, on the spur of the moment. If he hadn't known Peter was in trouble, or even maybe known he was dead, I just couldn't believe his obligation to John Thayer would make him do that. I contemplated Devereux. Was he just another pretty face, or did he know anything? For the time being, I decided to classify him as an innocent bystander. I signed the bar tab for Sal and went on with Devereux for a protracted meal. It was after 1 when I returned to my apartment. I was glad to fall into bed. The doorbell was shrilling furiously. I pulled on jeans and a shirt and looked through the peephole. 2 men were outside. The older one was Bobby Mallory, homicide lieutenant from the 21st District. He had been my dad's closest friend on the force.
"This is Sergeant John McGonagall," he said. "We'd like to ask you a few questions."
I took Bobby and McGonagall to the kitchen and put on some coffee. Behind me, Bobby said,
"You ever clean up this dump? You know, if Tony had turned you over his knee more often instead of spoiling you rotten, you'd be a happy housewife now instead of playing detective."
"But I'm a happy detective, Bobby, and I made a lousy housewife." That was true. My brief foray into marriage 8 years ago had ended in divorce after 14 months.
"Being a detective is not a job for a girl like you, Vicky. Now you've got yourself messed up in a murder. I want to know what you were doing messing around with the Thayer boy."
"Thayer boy?"
"Grow up, Vicky. Druka, who took the squeal, thought it might be your voice, and you left your thumbprint on the kitchen table."
"I always said crime didn't pay, Bobby. You guys want some coffee?" "I know very little about the Thayer boy. I know he's dead because I read it in the Sun Times."
Don't be cute with me, Vicky. You know he's dead because you found the body.
Well, I assumed after reading the story that the boy was there, but to me he seemed to be just another corpse. Snuffed out in the springtime of life, I added piously.
Bear me his funeral oration and tell me what brought you down there.
You know me, Bobby. Where evil flourishes, there I will be on my self-appointed mission to stamp it out. McGonagall coughed.
Do you have a client of some kind, Miss Warshawski?
She who hesitates is lost in the detective biz, so I opted for partial disclosure. I was hired to get Peter Thayer to go to business school. I went down there, and the door to his apartment was open, so...
After you'd picked the lock?
Mallory interrupted. So I went in.
Who hired you, Vicky?
John Thayer. I looked at Mallory squarely. A guy told me he was John Thayer. He wanted me to find his son's girlfriend, Anita Hill.
There's no Anita Hill in that setup,
McGonagall volunteered.
There is an Anita McGraw.
Yes, I was beginning to suspect that the guy had sent me on a wild goose chase when I found there was no Anita Hill at the university. Later, I was sure of it when I got a copy of Thayer's picture. He wasn't my client.
Vicky,
Mallory said,
I think you're a pain in the butt, but you're not a fool. Don't tell me you didn't ask for any identification.
He gave me his card.
Let me see it.
I went to the bedroom and got the card, wiped it clean of prints with a scarf, and brought it back to Mallory. Mallory put it in a plastic bag. I didn't tell him the only prints on it at this point were mine. He leaned forward.
What did you notice about the body?
He'd been shot, Bobby. I didn't do a post-mortem.
Vicky, you're no dummy. You didn't scream or throw up the way any decent girl would. You look the place over.
Okay, Bobby, the kid was set up. Someone he would invite to sit down for a cup of coffee had to be there. To my mind, a pro fired the shot, but someone he knew had to be along. The need to keep police secret showed on Mallory's face. Finally, he said,
We have evidence that the kids were getting their political posters from a firm which does printing for the knife grinders.
The International Brotherhood of Knife Grinders was notorious for their underworld connections. Suddenly, it dawned on me who my client was, and why Anita McGraw's name sounded familiar, but I said nothing. Mallory's face turned red.
Vicky, if I find you crossing my path in this case, I'll run you in.
They slammed the door behind them. I poured myself another coffee and ran a bath. As I sank into the water, I recalled a night more than 20 years ago. My mother was putting me to bed when the man who lived in the apartment below us staggered in. He'd been shot by hired thugs, but he was afraid to go to the police because he'd hired thugs himself, and would my dad help him? Tony did, fixing up the wound. The man was Andrew McGraw. McGraw was now president of Local 108, and, in effect, the whole International Brotherhood of Knife Grinders. He'd obviously remembered my dad and had pulled me out of the yellow pages, assuming I would be Tony's son. At the headquarters of the International Brotherhood of Knife Grinders, I gave my card to McGraw's secretary, a woman with gray sausage curls and a dress that revealed an unlovely sag in her upper arms. I have an appointment with Mr. McGraw, I told her.
You're not in the book, she said.
I had on my navy raw silk suit and thought I deserved a little more attention. I smiled. He arranged to see me privately.
Mr. McGraw may sometimes take up with whores, she said, but this is the first time he's ever asked one to his office.
I restrained an impulse to brain her with her desk lamp. Good-looking lady like you in his office, he doesn't need outside talent.
Mr. McGraw is in conference and can't be disturbed.
Her voice trembled. I felt like a creep. I sure knew how to rough up middle-aged secretaries. Noise of the conference penetrated the rosewood door.
God damn it, you set my son up.
With sausage curls protesting, I opened the door into the inner office. I didn't have any trouble recognizing John Thayer, the original of the picture in the Fort Dearborn Trust's annual report. And yelling back at him as I entered was my client. They both stopped short as they saw me. "Hi, Mr. Thayer," I said. "I'm sorry about your son. I'm the person who found the body. What makes you think Mr. McGraw set your son up?" The banker had recovered himself.
"I don't think that. But his daughter was going out with Peter. They were both political science students at the university. So when I learned my son was dead, I stepped in to see if McGraw knew anything about it. Peter never had a chance. Innocent young kid. High ideals. Giving up everything for the sake of a girl who'd hop into bed with... Watch what names you call my daughter!"
McGraw growled. Thayer continued.
"He and his daughter had earmarked Peter because he came from a wealthy family. Then, when they couldn't get any money out of him, they killed him."
"Have you shared this theory with the police, Mr. Thayer?" I asked. He flushed.
"No, I didn't want any of my neighbors to see what my boy was up to."
"But you're convinced that Mr. McGraw and or his daughter set up Peter and had him shot. Have you any evidence?"
"No, he doesn't, goddammit!"
McGraw yelled. "Did you give Mr. McGraw one of your business cards when you were here before?" I asked Thayer.
"I don't know," he said impatiently. "Why?"
"Well, I'm investigating a private matter for him. He showed me one of your cards the other night, and I wondered where he got it." Thayer stared at McGraw in disbelief. Then he asked me,
"What kind of things do you investigate?"
"I do a lot of industrial cases." Thayer turned back to McGraw.
"You're not trying to smear me with any of your dirty business, are you?"
"Watch it, Thayer! My name and operation have been cleared. In Congress, too."
"Yeah. Lucky, wasn't it, the way Bernstein died right before the Senate hearings?"
McGraw walked up to the banker.
"You SOB! You get out of here now or I'll get some people to throw you out!"
"Come on," I snapped. "Let's cut out this little boy stuff.
Why do you care so much about it, Mr. Thayer? You got something on your conscience that's making you so upset?"
"Watch what you say to me, young lady. I've got powerful friends in this city."
"Your powerful friends can take away my license, no doubt. But why do you care?" He was silent. Finally, he said,
"Be careful what you get into with McGraw. He's into a lot of ugly business."
He gave me a sour look. Then he left.